Wire Jesus Podcast, January 13th, 2012, Creative Commons licensed.
Initiating startup sequence.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
Wired Jesus Podcast. Wired Wanderings. Postmodern Book.
God scares me.
Well, yeah, but just because God doesn't answer your prayers doesn't mean he doesn't care about you.
Well, then why didn't he give me what I wanted?
Well, God can't just answer every prayer and suddenly give you everything you want. That takes all the living out of life.
What do you mean?
Hello, and welcome to the Wired Jesus Podcast, the wired wanderings of a postmodern pilgrim. I'm your host and fellow traveler, Tom Lieberg, and glad you've come along for our journey together.
What, you want to learn something?
Yes, I do.
What, you want me to teach you something? You want to learn something? All right, here's a useful lesson for you. Give up. Just quit. Because in this life, you can't win. Yeah, you can try. But in the end, you're just going to lose big time because the world is run by the man.
Who?
The man. Oh, you don't know the man? Oh, well, he's everywhere. In the White House, down the hall, Miss Mullins, she's the man. And the man ruined the ozone, and he's burning down the Amazon, and he kidnapped Shamu and put her in a chlorine tank, okay? And there used to be a way to stick it to the man. It was called rock and roll. But guess what? Oh, no. The man ruined that, too, with a little thing called MTV. So don't waste your time trying to make anything cool or pure or awesome, because the man's just going to call you a fat, washed-up loser and crush your soul. So do yourselves a favor and just give up!
I'm a pastor's kid. My dad was a Lutheran pastor for over 35 years before he retired. After pastoring two small-town congregations in Ohio and Michigan, we moved to Naples, Florida in 1974, where he became a church planter for our Lutheran tribe. Being in fifth grade at the time, the whole move was to some place close to the beach where it never snowed. Now, that was pretty cool. It was a good place to grow up, and the congregation did very well, and Dad retired out of there after 26 years. He and Mom still live down there. Now, my mom is a very faithful Christian woman, and growing up, one preacher she did like, of course, my dad was the best, but one preacher she did enjoy listening to was Robert Schuller. His Hour of Power broadcasts were something she rarely missed if we were home, and she'd watch that on TV, and over the years she bought many of his books. Like many of her generation, Schuller's spin on Norman Vincent Peale's Power of Positive Thinking really spoke to her and inspired her. The power of prayer combined by my good attitude would make for a divine team-up with Jesus that couldn't fail. My mom's a naturally optimistic person, and that's certainly been part of it. So she and her sister, my aunt, were regular viewers and supporters of his ministry for years. Now, I never watched all that closely. I wasn't interested in being a pastor as a kid, after all. Who wants to work for a bunch of people who whine and complain about not getting their way, who willingly throw each other and their leaders under the bus to save a buck or save face, and really aren't interested in the Jesus of the Bible? That's what I thought. I wanted to go into the army. On a bad day, sometimes still think about that. But by the same token, back in those days, I really didn't think much about Robert Schuller either. I have to admit, he had the strangest facial expressions, this never-ending grin that creeped me out, frankly, because he looked a lot like Jack Nicholson's portrayal of the Joker. And, of course, he was continually asking for money. You know, send donations, buy eagle statues, his books, music boxes, all kinds of tchotsky. But later on, when I learned a little more about Robert Schuller, I found out he really was a cutting-edge pastor for his generation and thought outside the box. He built that congregation by starting worship services at a drive-in out there in California, that old icon of the 50s and 60s. And people loved it. Fit the California lifestyle, and folks would come out. His message was tailored to young boomers, and I won't say that Jesus wasn't part of it. I'd say the gospel was there, and people who had checked out of Christianity in the post-World War II era started checking back in down there in Southern California. The whole thing eventually evolved into the Crystal Cathedral, with its soaring glass spires, a huge campus that drew in thousands every weekend, and a TV ministry that, you know, essentially laid the groundwork for most any other televangelist that has since followed. Millions of dollars came in, millions of dollars went out. A lot of folks were helped. But over time, something went wrong inside. And no one seemed to notice, at least not at first. I remember about 10 years ago, I was down visiting my parents during my January pilgrimage away from the cold north in search of the sun. And it was the week that I always was involved with the Transformational Leaders Gathering. And while I was home, she turned on an Hour of Power rerun, which was being shown on cable. It was always the same format, some inspirational speaker during the course of the service. This time was a war vet, as I recall, talking about keeping positive for Jesus saved him from dying. And Schuller was there standing beside him with that smile of his. But the shock came for me when the camera panned to the audience. And what I saw was a massive wave of gray hair. I'm not talking just a few retirees. I'm talking like Florida when I was growing up. I'm talking like there were no kids, no one there under the age of 60. If anything, it looked worse than most Christian mainline congregations today, since our average age is about 58. This was worse. There were a couple thousand people there. The place was pretty much full. But I think it was obvious to anyone with the eyes to see that this ministry was a dead man walking and just didn't know it yet. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you can't have a congregation of just retirees. I grew up in a place like that, Naples, Florida. You know, Florida, Arizona, where there's, you know, retirement communities, there's always more boomers moving in. And they'll keep feeding and filling a church to keep a congregation going. But in most parts of the country, focusing on any one generation, business or otherwise, is a recipe for failure. And for people wanting to be the church and follow Jesus, that type of focus is suicide. Well, if you follow the news, you probably heard last month that Crystal Cathedral has, for all intents and purposes, collapsed. Its ministries are bankrupt, and its property and assets are being sold off in the next 3 years. As one Wired Jesus listener from the area observed, they had long ago checked out from being connected to the community and being relevant there. It was just a building. And most folks around there did go. Well, the Crystal Cathedral building itself was put up for auction, and after bids to turn it into something, I think it was a college and a museum, it was finally purchased by the local Roman Catholic diocese as their new cathedral. It's now a predominantly Hispanic area, and that's who they are going to try and serve. It's quite a different demographic from the white boomer group that built up the ministry in decades past. The thing is, as I look across the church landscape today, the Crystal Cathedral is just the most visible religious indicator of a national reality that I call boomer bankruptcy. It's a harsh thing to say, particularly as a child of baby boomers and just on the gray edge of Gen X. But as a sometime student of generational studies, there is a much bigger picture here that has been seen and predicted for decades, and the leaders in the church and the culture better learn to see it, and more importantly, better learn to understand it and deal with it. But think of it this way. On the political side, the discussion is increasingly less about Republicans and Democrats and more about a ruling class and those getting screwed. If you watch the news, who is it you see as the leaders and drivers of the ruling class, be it Republican or Democrats? You know, the established folks in D.C. is how they apply the term. Who are they? They're boomers. Who are the faces of the Occupy movement? The boomer kids and grandkids who know they won't have as good a future because of the choices boomers have made, government and otherwise. Financial world? Who are the largest groups of unemployed? Those under 29. The one figure I saw, 16 to 29-year-olds have a 55% unemployment rate. College students are having hard times even finding a job getting out of college. The rage against corporations? Well, it's broadened out to include the government. The perception is that the powers that be don't care about the generations to come. That they only want to get their retirement benefits that they manipulated or bargained for and die in their beds with their power and money intact. It's to the point that even how one understands and interprets the news has been split by this great and growing generational divide. Boomers watch mainline and cable news. Those under 40, they go to news aggregators, blogs, and YouTube. ABC and Fox, they're both biased. They just choose different sides and are seen as being equally unbelievable. I remember when my grandfather was alive, he always had a picture of the current president in his house. He was a big Ronald Reagan fan. And even with presidents he disagreed with, there was an attitude of respect toward the office. You know something has changed when the President of the United States visits a high school here in Ohio and is laughed at by the students when he states that he ran to become president because of them. This is something different than what my grandfather understood. And the thing is, it's not partisan politics either. I mean, these are high school kids. These are generational realities and perceptions that an older generation, boomers, only care about themselves. The younger generations, Gen Xers and millennials, don't want to be part of that system because they know they're being left out already. Certain studies bear some of this out. for those who look at generational and social trends, the boomer generation is often referred to as the me generation, often because of its high divorce rates and radical shifts in from the previous generations on moral issues like abortion, sexuality, organized religion. The mantra of question authority was something of a hallmark in the 60s, and the result was a shift from being community in kind of the greatest generation, World War II sense, to a form of a tyranny of the individual. If it's all about me, that means accepting my opinions, my desires, my norms, my authority over yours. And for all the talk of diversity, boomers really aren't into sharing. They were raised to get their own way. As a generation, I would say that boomers created what I call a Cartman Christianity.
I am a cop and you will respect my authority.
Now, I'm a big South Park fan, and if you follow the show, Eric Cartman is the ultimate narcissist. Everything is always about him, and you must obey his authority. What he wants, how he wants to be catered to, everything must be centered on him, because in the end, that's the only thing he loves and really cares about. All of which makes for some great comedy. Oh, the Civil War episode, Coon and Friends and the Cthulhu episode. Yeah, it's great comedy. But it's a suicidal way to live. There's a saying that goes back to St. Augustine that sin is love turned in upon itself. And it seems throughout history, and particularly now, we have mastered that skill very well. As I said, our political and economic landscape has been shaped and scarred by this perspective for decades. But then again, as the Crystal Cathedral proves, so have our churches. My Lutheran tribe, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, is an example of this. We're a mainline Christian denomination representing a tradition in this country that goes back to the 1700s, but was radically impacted by the 1960s. The good? Active support of the civil rights movement, among the first to ordain women pastors, a freedom from biblical literalism, a desire to work with other Christians rather than be our own little isolationist group, that we were God's frozen chosen and everyone else would burn. We broke out a lot of those, broke out of that. A lot of good things happened. The downside? Yeah, I would say generational self-love and decay. While in previous decades, being the church and being a local congregation seem to have a future orientation, a sense of passing on the faith to future generations. Much of which was due is you didn't move, so on any given Sunday you might have three or four generations sitting out there in the pews. My own perception now is that much of that's been lost. And it's not simply because families move around so much. I think part of what has lost, or why we lost it, is that boomer values have been held up as normative in ways that drove them nuts when they were young and rebelling against their parents. They questioned their parents' authority. But as a generation now, they don't take it well when their authority is questioned. consider our political leaders, be it Nancy Pelosi or Newt Gingrich, or take your choice. They don't take being questioned well. But then, churches are not much different. Pastors spend much of their time now listening to complaints and keeping everyone happy, being told every opinion matters, that your call is to care for people, not to equip them to sit, to serve and live like Jesus. And so we're in that constant tension of what we understand our calling to be, and acting more like chaplains and caretakers. What kind of ministry does that get you? Well, in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, that gets you an average age of a church member today of about 58 years old. So who's doing that talking? Boomers. Who is left? Everyone younger. And the thing is, just like they are leaving every other boomer-shaped institution and value structure in our country right now, from political parties, independents now outnumber Republicans or Democrats, at least broken down individually. Things like Lions Club that were huge in the 60s and 70s when my dad was younger and involved in those. Those service clubs are dying. Same's true with labor unions, and just tick off the list. But in the church, why stay in a church that is more about catering to values and programs and services instead of being a community that places personal and generational happiness over servanthood and sharing? So, our denomination has grown old. Young people have left, and our membership is down from 5 to 4 million people since 1987. I really think it doesn't have nearly as much to do with doctrine agreements as it does with these generational and value differences. So I do some of my consulting work and try and discuss this with congregation leaders who invariably tend to be dominated by boomers. The blame is often placed right now on technology, that younger people want video and entertainment that you have at mega churches, and that they just need to learn to enjoy traditional church, but read into that the way boomers like it, not the traditional church that they remember as kids. Well, I guess I kind of see that like blaming the Spanish language for why Hispanics go to Spanish-speaking congregations rather than learning to appreciate English. Media is just another language. It's the digital language. But the thing is, it's a language that boomers don't speak well and are frustrated that they cannot fully master it the way their kids and grandkids do. But it's an excuse. As my friend and outstanding faith blogger Rachel Held Evans put it recently on her blog, what folks who are 30-ish are longing for is community, not cool. You know, tech misused becomes a concert of cool, not community. And there are plenty of single-generation hipster churches out there that have the bands and the lights and, you know, projection and things that I couldn't even touch. But they aren't the norm. And those don't last either any more than Crystal Cathedral did. Community and closeness between generations is what's been lost in too many aspects of our collective lives. And that's what's being sought for now from Jesus and those who want to follow him. People go where they are welcomed and accepted, even if they aren't completely understood. Like Rachel says, my generation and kids want an uncool church. One where digital language is as welcome as print, and there's no war over which we do. Where people are willing to seek to understand and share rather than demand conformity and complain when they don't get it. That others aren't behaving like them. Where living like Jesus matters more than pure doctrine or perfect performances or personal happiness. It's been fascinating this week seeing a number of different things converge. What kind of jumped out at me this week was in discussing television censorship of language and nudity on broadcast TV, conservative justice Antonin Scalia pronounced that broadcast television and its current controls are as dead as records and 8-tracks. He's exactly right. Not only are folks not using broadcast TV, if you're 30 and under, you're dropping cable and satellite too. But there's more dying than just that, and there's more happening than just this digital revolution that's leaving boomers in the dust. The whole system of Republicans and Democrats, ruling class, if you will, the systems of government and big business and economic entitlements, the systems of mainline Christian denominations, they're all bankrupt now. And there's a growing reaction against the boomer version of these things in search of something new, something that has a future. I think it's an opportunity for the church and for the country for something wonderful and renewing. At the same time, there is also the possibility of a complete disaster and a generational conflict the likes we haven't seen since the 1960s. The sad truth is the Crystal Cathedral is a likelihood for every Christian congregation in this country over the next 20 years. No matter what your size, you could fail and be closed. But this is also the time for the seeds of a new future. For church with the big C and church's small C, local congregations, to once again become relevant, to be a community that is once again shared, to create a future where generations serve Jesus together instead of living a Cartman Christianity. Well, that's it for Wired Jesus podcast number 61, the first one of 2012. Got some free time coming up yet this month where I hope to get a few podcasts in the can and get at least one out a month this year. Hard to believe, been going on with this since March of 2005, so keep plugging away. You're still out there listening and asking, and I'll keep working on it. So we'll see how it goes. Certainly, Mark Driscoll and his wife's new book on sex and women being subject to their husbands, along with Ed and Lisa Young's sex experiment on their church roof, that easily is worth a podcast. So we'll see what happens. Actually, I probably should have rephrased that. But either way, thanks for listening to Wired Jesus, and see you out there on the road.
What if God was one of us? Just a slob like one of us. Blue, 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 blue. Yeah, blah, blee, blee, blee.
Well done.
Very good.
Dr. Evil, that was fantastic.
Thank you, number two.
I wrote that.
Yeah.